Election integrity, it is something that everybody wants in order to show up to the polls and feel like your vote matters, right? It doesn't matter what town or city you live in. Everybody wants to have their confidence in their local elections, state elections, federal elections. And it's something that actually it became very obvious to me when Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas took on her role. To me, this was one of her biggest priorities in this role. And there was something I read last month that could have put this in jeopardy a little bit, which has to do with funding. And so we have the Secretary of the State in studio to talk more about this. And we always appreciate having you here. Thank you so much. Am I talking out of turn when I say that you are very focused on this? I feel like it's one of your biggest priorities since you took office.
Absolutely. And good morning. Always happy to be here. I don't think it's a surprise that I have, from day one to this day, always talked about funding in our election systems, because you don't get top-notch security, you don't get top-notch training, you don't get people understanding how to exercise their right to the ballot when it goes unfunded. You just don't. That's common sense.
So there, this article I was reading, and again, I don't know if it's been updated. This is about a week old at this point, but there were talks about the governor potentially cutting $900,000 from your budget, correct?
That's correct. So most people understand budgets are split into two numbers typically. Personnel, so fringe benefits, salaries, etc., and other expenses. So we receive about $3.5 million in other expenses. And in many agencies, that's purely discretionary. But for us, all but $150,000 of that is for actual items that are mandated by state or federal law. So in the first budget that came out this year, $900,000 was cut from that funding line. So,
wow.
Yeah, so that translates into, you know.
Right. What would that mean if that $900,000 goes away?
Absolutely. So people don't realize towns pay a lot of the costs for elections, but things that have to be done statewide and that also benefit from economies of scale, like we pay the licensing for the voter registration system because each town can't buy their own voter registration system.
Right.
And we're required by federal law to have a statewide system. We pay for the accessible voting equipment so that from anyone who has like Parkinson's disease to ALS to other disabilities, so they can use an accessible machine to vote at the polls. And we pay for voter registration forms. If you ever see a pile of voter registration forms in your registrar's office, it has come from us. And we are required to do that also by law. So there are all of these things that function in the background. We have to host the training platform that is required for every registrar of voters. So there are many plain costs like that that no one ever thinks about.
What about the cost? Because I think this was something you and I connected on early on when you first were elected into this position, was the cost of getting the word out there about election integrity. What are your rights at the polls? What, you know, how absentee ballots work? I mean, one of the things that I want to say, please let me know if I'm talking out of turn, but one of the things I believe you had told me, Secretary of the State, is that there is no real like budget for advertising, campaigning, essentially, to let people know, hey, this is what a clean election looks like. Hey, this is how you handle absentee ballots. Hey, here's the only people who can deliver them, things like that. Or even just the importance of showing up to vote and where is your polling location. You know, that has no budget, correct? There is no budget to get the word out there about the importance of showing up.
That is correct. And I've always talked about the need for voter education.
That's it. There you go.
But
I could have probably said that quicker.
But
yes.
Honestly, now I'm calling it a voter protection fund. People don't understand how much doubt is out there. I was at a party Saturday night and a woman recognized me and she came up to me and said, and she was probably in her 70s.
Okay.
And she was saying how she and her friends are afraid to go vote now. And I looked at her. I was a little puzzled. And I said, why? And like everyone else, they read the news. And she said, my friends are concerned that they're trying to get our data, or like someone's going to stop us.
There's
from
so much noise and confusion
when we show up. And I hear other things. I heard from a high schooler last week who's 17, who is going to be 18 by November so they can register early so that they can vote in the primary. And he was concerned that, like, people are going to take his voter data and try to harass him. So these are real fears that people have. Mm-hmm. And it's only going to get worse the closer we get to the midterms, I believe. I think it's imperative that we have funding for rapid response to let people know, hey, your polling location is fine here in Connecticut. No, ICE is not at the polls. No, you don't have to worry about being threatened at the polls, because people are getting subsumed by national news.
And I was going to ask that. How much of the concern do you hear from people? Do you think it stems from actual examples in Connecticut versus what's happening at the national level? Because, you know, certainly I think, let's take Bridgeport. Mm-hmm. Have to address the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. Bridgeport certainly, I do think, brings concerns that are totally fair, justified. I mean, what we've seen happen and continue to happen, I think, justifies people having doubts in those elections. However, if you live in Enfield, Connecticut, mm-hmm. I don't know if they're looking at Bridgeport per se. So how much of the concerns you're hearing across the state are coming from Connecticut-based problems we are or have seen versus what you're hearing at the national level?
1%. From Connecticut, 99% national. You'd be surprised how few people know about Bridgeport outside of this immediate area.
Really?
When I go speak places like Enfield, Ashford, fill in the blank, Kent, and I say things like, oh, and here's what we did in Bridgeport, people will often, like, in terms of our public information campaign, our law changes, etc., if I'm just giving them updates, they often look at me like, what happened in Bridgeport?
Really?
Yeah, it's really interesting.
It is, because Bridgeport, I feel like, has gone national. I mean, what happened mm-hmm. in 2023 mm-hmm. has gone national. So I that's interesting that even in Connecticut, there are people who aren't aware. So you're hearing, you know, majority of people who have concerns based on things that they saw at the national level. Maybe it's a national network or
exactly.
what they're hearing from other people in other states.
What people don't realize, there was a study done about this. I can't quote it exactly, but it said something like, people's trust in elections isn't based on how elections actually happen, but how they're talked about.
Mm, so the perception.
Yeah. So all of this talk about elections, and I'm not saying people shouldn't be concerned. There are things happening that are very concerning that, yes, here in Connecticut, we are looking at, we are protecting against, etc. But people are very nervous about what could happen, what might happen, and what they've heard have happened in other jurisdictions.
Well, and it's interesting because you brought up before the worry of data being shared. And I believe I was talking to State Rep Matt Blumenthal, who I know mm-hmm. is the chair of the Elections Committee, and he was saying that one of the two provisions in that massive bill last mm-hmm. week actually addressed basically FOI requests and being able to see what people have on their ballot. So that is actually a legitimate concern. And that was based, oh my gosh, it was, I want to say, not Bridgeport. It was another jurisdiction. I can't remember which one. It starts with a C and I'm totally blanking. But he had said that this was something totally separate from Bridgeport where an FOI request was made to see people's ballots. And so that was a legitimate concern of, well, is my information actually private? I don't want to share with people who I voted for or get attacked by a political party or anything like that.
Yes, that's exactly right. And our office obviously was very involved with that because we got involved in a case with the Freedom of Information Commission, which had ruled that ballots from referenda were not to be afforded the same privacy as other ballots. And we came out very strongly against that. All ballots should be secret. So I'm very happy that the legislature also agreed with that and they were able to pass that in addition to some stronger protections on the public voter file so that it can't be used to you know, think from telemarketers to anything else, that that information can't be used to harass.
Right. That was the second provision that I believe. I mean, there were some entities who could basically pay for that information, right? Or explain that if you don't mind.
The voter file is public and you can buy it. What people get confused about, when you buy the public file, a lot of information is redacted. So like you can't buy my full date of birth and social security number and all of that information, but you certainly can buy a lot of the rest of it.
But like, what is that, Secretary of the State? So if I wanted to know everything about Stephanie Thomas, not our Secretary of the State, but just random person in Connecticut, Melissa Sheketoff, I want to know all about her. What could the voter file actually pull up about me?
So the public file would have your name, address, if you had a phone number in there, an email, and the month and year of your birth date.
Okay.
Because Connecticut had already passed a law several, maybe 5-6 years ago, that eliminated the full birth date, especially, it's now a best practice. Part of the reason we recommended the law change that now would only allow the year is that as technology has changed and with AI and people are able to match data at a much more sophisticated level, cybersecurity best practice is no longer to share even the month and year, the year.
So that's now been eliminated based on this provision.
Exactly.
Okay. Interesting. We are chatting with Secretary of the State, Stephanie Thomas, in studio. And really quickly, Secretary of the State, because we had initially talked about this article I came across last month. It was talking about how the governor was potentially going to cut $900,000 from your office's budget. Have you heard from the governor since then?
We have. The good news is we have heard from the governor's office that it was a mistake in the sense that a lot of agencies, like I said, their other expense line is usually very discretionary. So there wasn't a granular understanding that we were using that line to pay for mandatory elements. So I have every confidence. I'm sitting here with my fingers crossed that it will be restored.
Okay.
We just haven't, you know, it's working its way through the legislative process now. But
okay, well, you let me know if it doesn't.
I will. Because you know, I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful.
Okay, good. No, I'm glad. Listen, but you know, when we talk about the legislative session for you at home, this is exactly what I'm talking about, is when we have these conversations, you make it public, you talk to your state reps, your state senators, a lot of times that can make the real difference of seeing change. So,
and it's how civics works.
Right.
Even for the Secretary of the State, we picked up the phone and said, hey, do you know what this line does?
Right.
And we had a conversation. Without that conversation, the cut just would still
would have
exist.
Maybe happened.
Yeah.
Makes sense. You know, talking about the provisions as well, there was something in there talking about using the tabulators. One of the biggest concerns we saw with early voting is that people did not love their ballots sitting. The idea of them just sitting in a box.
Yeah.
I think there was even a situation in Fairfield where there was fears of those ballots being tampered with because there was a break-in situation to an office that had the ballots sitting there. Nothing did happen, just to be clear. but that was a real fear. And just kind of voters being like, well, what do you mean they're just sitting in a box somewhere and we just hope to God no one touches them? What also changed in regards to early voting in the tabulator system?
Yeah, what I have heard from voters, they didn't like the idea that they had to sign the envelope and that someone could see who signed the envelope, open it, and see their ballot. Now, there are very clear laws and procedures that prevent that from happening, but people felt a certain kind of way about
vulnerable.
It, right?
Sure.
So we had always wanted to use the tabulators for early voting. But when the early voting law passed, we still had the old equipment and one felt confident that it could do all the things that would be necessary to secure those numbers without releasing them during the period of early voting. But now that every town in Connecticut has the new equipment, we had proposed a bill last session that would have allowed it to switch, but that bill died on the calendar. But now it is now passed, and we can look forward to using tabulators for early voting.
That's really great. So how does that work, Secretary of the State? So if I do an absentee ballot, it's there. If early voting is 7-10 days, you know, early, it goes right into the tabulator now, and it can hold on to that information, or how does that kind of work?
That is correct. So it goes right into the tabulator. Essentially, the tabulator records the numbers of voters,
okay,
but the ballots are still not counted, the results of what those voters voted for,
okay,
are not counted until election day.
Got it. But the tabulator doesn't in 24 hours just kind of forget or lose track of how. Okay, got it. Do they have to be reset then? So once an election is done, do the machine, I don't know how they work. Do they get reset or something? How do you make sure that there aren't votes that are left over from 5 months ago? Am I sounding ridiculous?
No. Like everything else in elections, very technical, a lot of processes and procedures. I don't know that most people realize. So tabulators are, they have to be tested before each election. One of those tests ensures that they're zeroed out.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have to be locked and sequestered for from the period of the test to the start of the election.
Got it.
So
you make sure that nothing was put in there in between.
Got it. So there are all these procedures also post-election.
Oh, interesting.
Where they also have to be sequestered. So there are a lot of things in place to make sure that we have free and fair elections.
Yes. Well, that's what we're going for, right? Yeah, and you did bring up an educational proponent earlier, Secretary of State, and I wanted to kind of reiterate that because I think your office in the last year, especially a couple of years, I mean, the website was one thing. You have a video series. You do have a kind of an educational program that is available to Connecticut residents, correct? I mean, I just want to reiterate that for people.
Yeah. Thank you for that. powerofcivics.ct.gov is a free interactive online learning platform that we put together. When people started asking us, what else are we supposed to do other than voting?
Mm.
I'm a big proponent that we have all had an experience where we see a headline and we're like, what? How are they doing that in my town? Or something happens with your family and you're like, I don't know who can help. And what I tell people is, that is not the moment you want to try to figure out how government works. Better to start chipping away at that knowledge so when a need arises, you already know where to go.
Mm.
And the power of civics is meant to do that. Really quick, 10-minute modules, quizzes, fun videos to teach you where you can have your voice heard at the local, state, and federal level.
Yeah. And I think, too, what I really appreciated about it, because I did start to, dive into this when it first launched, was the importance of the different elections. Because one of the things that we see, not just in Connecticut, but across the country, mm-hmm. is very low turnout for local elections. And what's interesting about that, or ironic, is that a lot of those local elections are actually the ones that are going to have the most impact on you day to day versus the national or even the state.
Yeah.
So I thought that that was also very helpful in just identifying, what does a city clerk do?
Yeah.
Why does it matter to know who's on your board of education, your board of finance, so on and so forth? So it really, I think, also identifies the importance of showing up to these elections and mm-hmm. being informed before you go, which I think is important.
Yeah. Whenever I say out loud, local elections, only 3 out of every 10 eligible voters are registered voters, not even eligible. Only 3 out of every 10 is voting in elections. And that's high.
And that's considered high.
Compared to 7 or 8 out of 10 in a presidential election.
That's wild to me.
Crazy.
So we are going to link that website to ours, voiceofct.com. We're going to attach it to the Secretary of State's podcast on our website under Melissa in the Morning, Power of Civics. Make sure you check that out. That is available and it is free. And Secretary of the State, thank you always for giving us the time. We really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.